We're beginning the book of Bamidbar. So, the book of Bamidbar is also known as Chumash HaPikudim, the book of countings, of rememberings. And Hashem tells Moshe to count the Jewish people. And our book is going to have a lot of countings, a lot of enumeration of the Jewish people. We count them from 20 years and up. And Moshe is told to count them together with Aaron and the heads of the tribes. And here we have an enumeration of the heads of each tribe. And that brings us to Sheni. What we see is that each person would have to show their lineage when they'd come to be counted. So that's also interesting that they were able to prove and validate what families they came from. They had that tradition. Then the Torah enumerates how many people were in each tribe. And the total enumeration was 600,000, 603,550. The Levites weren't counted with them.
And Hashem, the exact number?
Yeah.
In the pundit, it rounds off.
Well, we also rounded off. We said 603,550.
Oh, okay.
That's the number the Torah gives. So the Levites are going to be counted separately. They're considered the king's battalion. They get counted separately. They're given the responsibility of taking apart the Mishkan and setting up the Mishkan. And the Jews are instructed to camp in their arrangement around the tabernacle with their flags. And here we see the importance of the flags. So the flags would have their color. The flag would have their animal. We once went through the whole description of what each flag's color was. If you're interested, I could tell you now. The Midrashim go into it. Yeah, you want to hear the flags? Okay. So Yehuda was on the east. His flag was blue like the heaven, and he had a lion on it. He was camping with Yisachar, and Yisachar's flag was like the sand of the sea, and he'd have a sun and a moon on his flag because Yisachar were masters of the constellations. They knew how to calculate the constellations, so they had a sun and a moon on theirs. Together would camp Zebulun, and their flag was the color of the moon, and the color of the moon was to signify their wealth, that money is white, and that their silver is like white, like the moon. And they'd have a picture of a ship because they were merchants. You go to the south, so you have the tribe of Reuven. They had a red flag with a dudoim that Reuven brought his mother. Then with him was Shimon. His flag was green, and he had the city of Shechem on his flag because Shimon and Levi were the ones who took down the city of Shechem. God would camp with them, and his flag was white and black. And you, on his flag, you had a picture of a battalion because God was a tremendous warrior. His tribe were tremendous warriors. In the west, you had Ephraim with Menashe, and their flag was the color of the Shoham stone, dark black. Ephraim's had that color with an ox, and Menashe had that flag with a re'im. And together with them camped Binyamin, and his flag was multicolored. He had all the colors together with a wolf. Binyamin is described as being like a wolf. And finally, in the north, we have Dan. His flag was the color of sapphire, and it had a snake on it, because in Yaakov's blessings, Dan is described like a snake, that the snake could bite a horse, and by biting the horse, he throws off the rider. With him camped Asher, and their flag was the color of the light of oil, with a picture of a tree, of an olive tree, because Asher's territory had a lot of oil on it. And there, on the north, you also had Naphtali, whose flag was the color of clear wine, and he had a ayala, a ram, on his flag, because Naphtali is described as being swift like a ram. The children of Aaron are described as the children of Aharon and Moshe. Moshe gave birth to those children? Obviously not. The idea is that whoever teaches his friend's son Torah, it's as though he is the parent of that child.
Yeah, we learned that today, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Let's think about the beginning of the parsha, the first 40 or 50 psukim. The way it's laid out is how they number them. And instead of saying they took a shekel for each person according to their father's house and their household, Zulun's number was this, Reuven's number was that. They list all the tribes, and they use the exact same lashon from their house of their fathers. It's like you're giving how to go vote in a voting booth, and you're giving instruction for every single individual who comes up there. Why is that?
I don't have a good answer for that. The Medrash already comments that we find that the Torah elaborated in areas that we don't see the reason for it, and the Torah minced words in areas where we could really use a few more words being said. You have whole tractates that are based on one verse. Ki kach ish isha. They're all of Kiddushin. Ki kach ish isha. Yeah, so you have... So the Midrash already comments that, so to speak, Hashem has his favorites. Hashem has his topics that he wants to elaborate on, and things that not. Sometimes we understand and sometimes not.
Is there a different way of putting these pesukim together? In the sense that the Torah is written how we understand it in the language we understand. But is there a different way of breaking up the sentences and the letters so that all these numbers and instructions come to read something else along the lines of historical codes? I don't. There's got to be a different way of reading this. What is the reason we're receiving this information forever?
Right. This is a part of the eternal Torah, which means this has as much importance as every other verse. And then the question begs itself, why? What's so important about this? And like the Talmud says, there's a verse that says, "V'timna ita pilegesh le'elifaz." Eliphaz had a concubine named Timnah. Who cares? Why do I care who Eliphaz's concubine was? So we learn all kinds of things from that verse. But that's the classical example the Talmud gives when the Talmud wants to say a verse that you really can't figure out why it's there. So here you're right. We're going to have many verses like that throughout the book of Bamidbar, where you look at it and you wonder, why did the Torah tell us all this information? And I don't have an answer.
Over.
Oh yeah, wait till you get to Nasa. Next week you'll see it even more. Right.
We need
information. Right. On the surface level, it's very repetitive. We know that there's pshat, remez, drush, sod. On the pshat level, it's very hard to understand why the Torah would say so many words. So you're saying there must be more to it in the remez, drush, sod. Yes, but I don't know it. So back to the idea that one who teaches Torah, it's like he bore the child. So we have a mitzvah to have children in the world. And the Talmud tells us that a person who raises an orphan, it's as though he gave birth to that child. A person who educates someone else's child, it's as though he gave birth to that child. And here we see that when the Torah commands us to bring children to the world, the Torah didn't just say, have children, procreate, and then whatever will be with them will be. If they become thieves and thugs, what do you care? You brought children to the world. You did yours. No. Par and parcel with the commandment to have children is the responsibility to educate them. And there are two components to the mitzvah of pru urvu. In order to fulfill our obligation of procreating, a person has to have a male and female offspring, and they have to grow up to be Torah observant Jews. Without that, you didn't fulfill it. So pru urvu has two components, and now it's very understandable. If Moshe taught Aaron's children, so he fulfilled the second component of pru urvu. He ensured that they would grow up to be what they should be. And now we understand why they are called Moshe's children. So the Levites are given responsibility over the Mishkan. We are warned that we should be careful because there's a wrath that could spill forth from above if people come too close. And this is a concept that applies not only to the physical advancements, it's also spiritually. Sometimes people think they could take all kinds of leaps in the spiritual world and they fall flat on their face. So now we're up to Shlishi. The Torah describes the order of the camps with the... with the flags, we discussed it. Our sages tell us that the order of the camps correspond to the stars, and that's the idea that just as there's the army of the stars up above, Hashem's army down below is the people of Israel. And this order in which we were arranged around the tabernacle was the same order that we had on tradition going back to Yaakov Avinu. That Yaakov told the tribes how to carry his casket up to the land of Israel. And this corresponds to the strengths of Israel. Each tribe has their strength. Each tribe had their talis with its design. Each tribe had their nusach of davening. There were 13 nuschaot, 13 versions, because each tribe corresponding to its strength has its approach in Avodas Hashem and its tefillah.
So they are mostly based on the nusach of Yehuda?
I don't know.
What does nusach mean?
The version of prayer, meaning do you say V'yatzmach purkone or not? Okay. So Aaron has four children, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Isamar. And the Torah reiterates that Nadav and Avihu passed away because when they brought a foreign flame and they had no children. So here Chazal explore what was the cause, the foreign flame, or that they had no children? There's an interesting thought, and I don't know who says it. I heard it today at the Bris. The father of the child said it, and it's a very nice thought. He said, I didn't hear it, I was in another room, so I don't know if it was his thought or someone else said it, or he was quoting someone. He said, his name is Yishai Rivera. He said that Elazar, Nadav and Avihu, when they didn't have children, that stunted their growth. Meaning a child forces you to grow. You don't develop to where you should be if you don't have children. And so Nadav and Avihu, the idea that they brought a foreign flame and they didn't have children, they go hand in hand because they didn't develop their traits the way they should have because they didn't have children. So this idea in fact appears in the Gemara that a person becomes more merciful and there are certain public responsibilities that we say in order for him to hold that office, he must have children. That otherwise he doesn't know what it means to care, to have mercy, to be a merciful person. As difficult as it is to hold that wailing baby at 3 o'clock in the morning, at the end of the day you walk away from that experience a changed person. You do it once, you do it twice, you do it 1,000 times, you're a different person. When you force yourself to smile at a baby after he's just taken your whole night's sleep from you, you're a different person. You will see that it is a marvelous experience to wake up feeling aches and pains and knowing you didn't get a good night's sleep and look at him and smile and say, he's so cute. When really, you know that he's the cause of why you didn't sleep last night. So there's a love that develops, and a person develops when he has children. And there's nothing else that'll take that out of a person like that. So the Levites are given their responsibility. They're responsible for the vessels. They're responsible for the service of taking down and building up the tabernacle. And they are given under the responsibility of Aaron and his sons. And we're warned, Vazara karev yumat. If a foreigner comes too close, he will get the death penalty. The Levites are given in exchange for the firstborn, meaning technically every family should have had a priest, and it's just because the firstborn sinned with the golden calf. And here we see an important concept. Hashem says, whoever takes a step towards me, I'll pull him many steps towards me. You take the first step, I'll pull you the rest of the way. The Levites took a step towards Hashem. They didn't do the golden calf. Hashem pulls them all the way up. Now they have a separate standing among Israel. Yes?
I have a question about in the time of the Mashiach. Not that we know that much about it, but will the firstborn again serve in the temple, or will it still only be the Levites who call him in?
I don't know. Once upon a time I saw some sources on this and I don't remember. Too many years have passed. I don't know. So the Levites are counted from 1 month up. And here we see an interesting idea that it's only after a month that a child enters the status of of definite existence, so to speak. Meaning until a month, we're not sure whether he's going to make it. So we today say if he has his nails the way he should and his hair the way he should, if he is born developed, so then you know he's going to live. I mean, most children do live, and that's okay. But so there are different levels of mourning depending on which age. Did anyone know him? I don't remember. I don't remember the exact delineation. the Levites are divided, the three heads of the tribe, the three sons of Levi are Gerishon, Kehat, and Merari. Notice Gerishon means I was a stranger there. Kehat, I think, means they wore me down like Kihui. And Merari means they embittered me. So even though Levi himself was not one of those that were in the forced labor camps, he named his children over the embitterment. Just like we find Miriam was called Miriam, bitterness, because they embittered the Jews' lives. Miriam means bitterness. Yeah, that's what it says in the Seder Olam Rabbah. Yeah, it is. Isn't that interesting? I never said that to my cousin Miriam. Yeah, what?
What does Nora mean?
Nora?
Yeah.
Nora could mean terrible. Nora could mean awesome. Nora could also mean awesome. Okay, so we start the count, and we won't finish the count of the Levites until next week's Parsha. And that brings us really to the conclusion of this week's Parsha. The firstborns of the Levites are redeemed in exchange for the firstborn. The Levites are redeemed in exchange for the firstborn. Now they're going to take the job of the firstborn. And there's a surplus of 273. There's a surplus of 273. And that surplus gives 5 shekel. And then that's how they're redeemed, those extra firstborns. So that brings us maybe to one more important idea. And that is the idea that firstborns have to redeem themselves. If they weren't redeemed by their parents, they have to redeem themselves. Every few weeks, we have a pidyon, a ben, here at the lunchroom, where Rav Bigon will redeem a firstborn. Rav Bigon is a kohen, and the firstborns have to redeem themselves. That's something which the firstborns do as adults here in Machon Meir, or anywhere. If you weren't redeemed as a child, so then you could still take care of that. That's your mitzvah now. If you don't know, then you do it out of suffering, yeah. Out of doubt, you could do it. You won't make a blessing, but you do the action. Yeah, it's not a big deal. You go to a Kohen, and you give him that value. Now, Kohanim, like Rav Bigon, very often will give you back your money. They don't have to. Technically, it's theirs. You have to give it to them. What? You give the value of 5 silver coins in the days of the days of the Torah, which is estimated by grams and the equivalent value today. Silver today is about $28 an ounce. So I think it's somewhere in the range of about 250 shekel, I think.
That's
it's good money to be a coin, yeah. It's good money, yeah.